Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to talk about in this episode are the top 300 comic sales through Diamond to retailers for November 2017. Now, this is what is invoiced to retailers. That means some copies, of course, are sitting on store shelves so we can buy them, which is a good thing. It is, again, North American sales. It doesn't cover everything, but it covers the lion's share of it for most comics. Obviously, some publishers do better outside of Diamond than others. Some don't have much of a presence outside of Diamond. And I think the hardcore comic book collectors that are getting things in print are going through stores serviced by Diamond. So I think this is highly relevant information and gives us a pretty good sense of what the comic audience is interested in and what's marketable and sellable and whatnot these days. It was a good month for DC. Normally Marvel tops the lion's share of the list or has the most items, I should say, on it. This time DC did. Not only had two items right there at the top, they had all but two of the top 10 items. And when we get to that, it's kind of a interesting breakdown there. DC had 44.73% of the total units for the top 300 comics. Marvel had 37.44. It's kind of interesting mirror image of the numbers there. That works out to 2,924,477 units for DC and 2,447,983 units for Marvel. So nearly a half a million unit gap there. Not quite. Marvel being a little under 2.5 million, DC being a little under 3 million. Image is there in third place with 7.24% of the total units. That works out to about 473,514 units. IDW had 3.23% of the total units, Dynamite had 1.88%, and Dark Horse had 1.13% of the total units. So when you add those guys up, which is all of the premier publishers and Dynamite, which did pretty well, that is 95.65% of the total units sold for the top 300.
Yes.
So again, next time you go into a store and wonder, why don't they carry more independents? They're riskier. They don't sell as well for them. They're not the safe bet.
Yeah. I guess to me, what jumps out more than anything, and it's not the percentages, it's the raw hard number. And I guess the question is it a bad month or is it a much bigger problem? And at 2.44 million for Marvel is their lowest since September of 2016. Okay, it happens. You have a bad month. But it is clearly their lowest before that, going all the way back to November of 2013. So it is their second worst year or month in over 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows? Maybe that'll change next month. But wasn't this supposed to be one of their better? Aren't a bunch of these the legacy titles that were supposed to help?
Well, it's funny because a lot of them were legacy titles on their second month.
Okay.
And all the propping up they tend to do with the promotional covers and such, we saw some pretty harsh drops. Matter of fact, most of the largest drops, I think they were over 26,000 or thereabouts. All of them, I think, were Marvel.
Okay.
In fairness, the top four bumps in sales were Marvel as well. But that goes to just an inherent volatility of Marvel titles at times, because they'll go for an issue that has, you know, half a dozen or more variant in incentive covers, followed by one that doesn't have any, followed by one that's got three, followed by none, followed by, you know, it's all over the map.
Yeah.
And it goes back to that eternal debate. Are you better off selling the title or better off selling as much as you can of a particular issue? There's pros and cons to both approaches. The way Marvel has been doing it of late historically is going for the individual issue, getting as much as they can out of particular ones through variant covers and such. And what it means is the sales during that honeymoon period of the first, 2-3 months or whatever, are not the least bit indicative of how a title's probably going to be doing long term.
Yeah. Interesting. Certainly, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we talked about a bit last month, you know, hey, maybe you can just say, hey, the goal is to sell X number of units a month. If that is the case, like I said, regardless of how you do it, this isn't a great month for Marvel.
No, and it's not just that they were between events or they didn't have a big ticket item come out or whatever. I think it's a matter of there's a lot of a kind of a lukewarm response to much of what they're coming out with. And I think that there's a perception problem they're starting to have right now because there's a couple of titles being canceled, as often happens when they get to low sales, and it is being referred to as a bloodbath.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. Yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, and again, referring to it as a bloodbath, kind of insane. They canceled some of their lower selling titles. That's completely normal and typical.
Absolutely. And there are a couple of these. I did some quick charts this evening of them. And a lot of those are titles that, I mean, they're around 10,000 units or something. So for anyone to be surprised or disappointed or to say it's part of some, you know, anti-diversity agenda or whatever, it's a little ridiculous.
Now, it is what it is. Things don't suck.
Yeah.
And this is one of those things I talk about in television, and it's true about comics, and it's true about everything else. For all the critical acclaim or, oh, this is, the end of the day, it either sells or it doesn't. And if it doesn't sell, it's going to be replaced. So that, you know, that is what it is.
That's the nature of capitalism. Absolutely.
Exactly. It's business, you know.
You know, so, it shouldn't go any other way. Again, there are a couple of them, though, that, Monsters Unleashed, I don't think ever should have been greenlit as an ongoing. The way they've been pushing a couple of titles, some of these were long shots to begin with.
Yeah, well, that's also very true. And you can't, like I said, and as we've discussed before, and you particularly, it's important / good to try different things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But also, yeah, some things just don't work.
Well, you try them, and if they work, great. If they don't, you cut your losses, you move on. Yeah. Now, should they be doing some of these as miniseries instead of ongoing? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But, you know, to think that, you know, Iceman's title not lasting is indicative of anything other than he's probably not a character that can support a solo title, I'm trying to think what would be another good example. I mean, there's arguably two Hawkeye titles going on right now, so there's that. U.S. Avengers is one of those that really is a continuation of New Avengers, which is a continuation of New Avengers, which is a continuation of New Avengers, and you go back a couple of levels deep on that one, and you look at it, and it's had a pretty steady sales trend across all of those titles that got it where it's going.
Yeah.
That's a history going back, I'm going to say, 13 years or so?
Yep.
And it's just a pretty steady downward decline till it's getting to where it's in the 10 to 20,000 range.
Yeah.
You know, and it happened every time they would replace some of the characters with less Avengery characters. So,
I agree. I mean, and it's weird. It's one of those things where Legacy, in theory, that's what they were going to do, but they didn't really do it.
I remain unclear as to the Legacy intent.
Yeah, because, you know, when we first heard about, hey, the Avengers, you know, because me, who doesn't buy currently any Marvel books, was thinking, hey, if they put out an Avengers with Tony, Steve, Bruce, I will buy that. That book isn't for sale.
What if they had come out with another lineup that was Black Knight, the Monica Rambeau, Captain Marvel, Photon, Quasar, whatever she's calling herself today. Pulsar, who? I think.
Yeah, whatever.
She-Hulk, Captain Marvel. I'm trying to think. There was that's a roster of Avengers that lasted for a little bit at one point in time. What if they had their own book? You know, if they had gone with Legacy and said, you know what, we've got all these Avengers. We want to have 4 or 5 Avenger titles. Whether that's a good idea or not, let's say they wanted that.
Okay.
Because it seems to be what they're doing. And they had basically said, here are various non-overlapping Avenger lineups we could have had in the past. Let's resurrect them. I mean, there are a couple that would work better than others, obviously.
Here's the simple truth. With an event like this, much like Rebirth, much like the New 52, there was a somewhat mainstream push.
Mm-hmm.
The average, and I, you know, I do your podcast. I read a ton of DC books. I don't read a ton of Marvel. That's true. But I know a little bit more about comics than just your average person walking down the street who may have heard about Legacy. When I hear, hey, we're going back to our roots, I want to walk into a comic store and buy an Avengers book that's Tony, Steve, and Bruce.
But somebody else,
was that available?
Somebody else may want to go in and buy an Avengers book from when they were reading comics.
That may or may not be true. Again, ask the average person walking down the street, who are the Avengers? You got the movie, you know, people know the movie.
I agree with that.
My kids, you know, my kids have been watching the Superhero Squad recently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, I'm a comic guy. You're still reading all this stuff. You weren't even sure what what's her name was calling herself these days.
Well, because she's undergone about 8 different names. And she's not really used that much right now. Next Wave, I think, was one of the last times that character was really prominent. No, I take it back. She was in Ultimates.
So here's my real question. What is the Avengers book that is on this list?
You know, they're at an odd point right now because there is the Avengers title.
Yeah, 673. So that's the one that looks Legacy to me.
Vision.
Okay, he's in the movie. Okay, that's something.
Oh, let me think off the top of my head. I'm a little behind on my reading. It's this one particularly had Hercules as well, kind of as a quasi-guest star. It's the one they're doing the team up with the Champions. And Falcon, I'm blanking on it.
The point is, for Legacy, going back to our roots, I couldn't walk in and go, hey, I heard about this Legacy thing, and buy an Avengers book that was Tony, Bruce, and Steve.
And
possibly Thor.
Well, I think you can, and I think it'll be this one. It'll just be another few issues. Because right. They're kind of at an odd spot. So
I argued it at the other point. You know, and again,
I get it.
I'm not reading this, but at this point, I'm closer to the casual fan you're trying to attract with this kind of thing than a more diehard, you know, Marvel zombie.
I guess my point was that they could have had their cake and eaten it too with some of this. They could have taken iconic, amazing, memorable lineups for the Avengers and the X-Men and whatnot, and basically split them across all of the different books, you know, to where it's, what era did you start and think is the cool time of comics? These are the couple of books that are for you.
On the bright side, Peter Parker's Spider-Man, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming, I could be wrong, Tony is currently the star of Invincible Iron Man.
You could be wrong. He's still missing in action, presumed not dead, I think.
I'm hoping Mighty Thor is the god I know, Donald Blake in his alter ego.
Nope, not yet. This is the Death of Thor storyline, so they haven't finished off with the current one yet.
So again, as a somewhat fan of superheroes, who's not a Marvel zombie reading everything, why, if I was sold, come back to this, we're getting back to our roots. Is there an Incredible Hulk that's Bruce?
No, the Incredible Hulk is still Amadeus Cho. But they're doing Planet Hulk again, and they're going to do World War Hulk afterwards, so that's
awesome.
Familiar.
So, but you get my point.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree with you entirely. I think they should have had it to where, and they've got certainly enough titles to do this, whatever you thought was kind of the iconic high point for Marvel, there could have been a title for you to gravitate towards. But that's not what they've done. And they're kind of stuck in a weird position here of, if they get rid of some of the characters that are currently out there, they get knocked for being anti-diversity and whatnot. If they don't, they get knocked for not having the legacy characters, the iconic ones, the ones we recognize and such. But I think Marvel's been going through a phase, much like DC went through at times, where kind of the implication was the problem they were having was the iconic characters. There was a point that DC really did not know what to do with Superman. It's like, let's take him out of the picture. Let's have somebody else there. Let's have him go on a walkabout. Let's, you know, what if he wasn't Superman? That would make things better.
DC's got an interesting problem with Superman, but.
But I could argue that for the last couple of years, Marvel's had the exact same sort of problem with Wolverine, Hulk, Thor, Captain America, and a lot of their iconic characters.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do with them. It's like they feel they're played out. But I think there are these are characters that they went for decades without having that real problem. There would be high points and low points, absolutely. But to say that, well, we've told all the stories we can tell is as nonsensical as when somebody at the patent office said, we may as well close up shop. Everything's been invented.
Yeah.
Now, I'll grant that the bar that the stories have to hit is creeping up and up over time normally. You could argue at some points, maybe not. But the readers get more and more educated, more and more. It's, you've got to do something new. And every time you've done something new, that kind of crosses one thing off the list as to what's new now. I just think that so many Marvel books are in a kind of a lackluster period. And witness the fact they only had two items in the top 10. One was Star Wars, and one was the first legacy issue of Captain America.
Yeah. Is that Steve, at least?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Like I said, I get it. I guess, you know, at this point, as to a half outsider, I hear, hey, we're going back to our roots legacy. I'm thinking that means the general accepted version that is most in the zeitgeist of the world.
And I think that would be a smart move, absolutely. And they may be getting there, but they're not there yet. And to your point of, well, they timed the branding wrong, I would agree with that. But
and to be fair, if you want to go with all these other versions, that's great. That was the time to use your all-new, all-different branding.
Well, and they did.
Okay.
It's just, do you want the knockoff Thor, or do you want the real thing?
Well, and that I get is a matter of taste. But you need a clear vision, at least, in what you're selling.
Agreed.
And to say, hey, we're going radical new directions, you sell that as different and new. To say we're going back to the classics, you sell that as legacy. You don't sell those two things as the opposite of what they sound like.
Well, the problem
is, that just confuses your potential market.
No, totally. It's mixed messages. It's confusing. It's bad branding. But it's a pendulum that's swinging back and forth. Let's go back to the comfort zone. Let's get out of the comfort zone. Let's go back to the comfort zone. Let's get out of the comfort zone.
Yeah.
And if that's how you've got to be doing things, I would argue there's something kind of wrong, because you're always kind of advertising your stuff or promoting your stuff as not being what it just was. And you're almost leaving a trail of breadcrumbs behind you saying, that was a mistake, that was a mistake, that was a mistake.
Yeah.
And I grew up reading comics where that didn't seem to be a problem.
Yeah.
And I would like us to get back to that point. I don't know that we can. If we look at the top 10, which is, again, predominantly DC, if we take out for a moment the two Marvel titles of Cap and Star Wars, the top two items are Doomsday Clock number one, with the regular cover beating the lenticular cover by just a hair, like 160 or something issues or something like that. Followed by Batman Who Laughs, Batman Lost, the two regular issues of Batman, Batman the Devastator, Cap, and then the Batman Annual for the regular title. So really, these things almost split halfway down the middle between Dark Knight Metal crossovers or one-shots or whatever and the Batman title.
Yep.
DC did really well at the top of the list, because then just outside of the top 10 are two issues of Justice League and Batman White Knight.
Yep.
So the fact that Marvel only had, the two issues over 63,000 units, that I think is the most indicative of Marvel just isn't in a strong spot right now.
Yeah.
And at times it's like, okay, the X-Men stuff's doing great, but the Avengers not so much. Or the Avengers is doing great, but the X-Men not so much. Or Fantastic Four or whatever.
Yeah.
But they're kind of between smash hits or whatever.
Yeah, no doubt. It's just, it is an amazingly confusing list. And when you get into the raw numbers, which I do think to some degree are indicative of something,
mm-hmm.
of the individual titles, you've got Captain America at 87,000.
Yeah.
Punisher at 62. Amazing Spider-Man at 61. Old Man Logan at 60. Now nothing over 60. And then you've got a whole group in the 50s. But, Mighty Thor, Guardians of the Galaxy, Doctor Strange, Spectacular Spider-Man. These are in the 40s now. Mm-hmm. X-Men Gold's in the 30s. The previous issue of Old Man Logan is in the 30s. There's amazing how many Venom, a book we were talking about being unbelievable and topping the list a few months ago, got two issues in the 25,000 range.
Yeah, but so much of that comes down to the flash in the pan syndrome of let's throw some variants at it. That Punisher issue, 218 at 62, almost 63,000 units,
yep,
is up 200% from the previous one, which is around 20,000.
Yep.
Because it's part of the legacy stuff. Let's go give him the War Machine armor or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'd have to go double check how many variants it had, but I'm willing to bet it had a fair number.
Yeah.
And that means that next issue, which is maybe going to have one or two variants versus, I don't know, six or whatever it may be, but typically that would cause that next issue to appear to plummet. And it causes, I think, perception issues. If it catches a retailer unaware, it means there are going to be plenty of issues left on the rack. Oh, and suddenly it's like, geez, that's not selling anymore to people who are looking at it on the rack at the store.
Yeah.
Geez, he's flooded with that. That must be crap. Nobody wants that, even if it's selling well. You know what I mean?
Let's talk Doomsday Clock for a minute.
Okay.
DC, yes, they had two different price points. They did a lenticular. This is something I also think Marvel, we've not seen them do, is separate out the order codes. This book essentially topped the list at 238,000 units.
Yes.
Pretty impressive. Obviously, there's no way. I don't think issue 2 can do that. Are there two versions of issue 2? I don't even know.
Yes, but the other one's not lenticular.
Okay.
So that means it's going to be a second cover at the same $4.99 price point. So it will get lumped in with, you know, all of Doomsday Clock 2 in one line item.
Okay.
So even if issue 2 sold exactly how number 1 did, and the lenticular stuff went to this other cover and stuff, my charts are going to kind of show it a little wonky.
Show it as a 50% or 100% increase.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I couldn't just leave out item 2, you know?
No, I understand. They're all different. It's interesting. One could argue that is intentionally designed to goose these numbers that we talked about a few months ago, or almost designed to say we're ignoring the numbers and don't care.
You could really argue either way on that. They've been doing lenticulars on, you know, Action. They did it on The Button.
Talked about how they weren't very successful a month ago with actually some of the Oz stuff.
Yeah, but here, I mean, clearly it worked, so...
But the fact that the non-lenticular actually outsold it, I think does show that maybe a lot of this is just in the, what's the word I'm looking for? People are interested in the story, not the cover.
I think at $4.99, doing a dollar additional variant cover, some people it's like, hey, $4.99 is enough. I'm not going to get the more expensive version.
Absolutely.
So I think there is a financial pragmatism that's coming into play. If it had been $3.99 and $4.99, we might have seen the order of these reversed.
Yeah.
But the fact it was almost a dead split there, I found very interesting.
Yeah, well, in some ways it means the lenticular still has an audience, but maybe it's not a bigger audience than the price-conscious audience.
Yeah.
That's an interesting one. All these Batman one-shots, what would you like to say about them?
I'm looking forward to them being over.
Okay.
There have been one or two that were okay, but by and large, I was a little apprehensive about, you know, do we really need a Justice League of Evil Batman? And my initial inclination was, no, I really don't think we do. And these have not really swayed me of that.
Okay.
And I think adding essentially, what, 6-7 issues into the middle of the Dark Knight Metal stuff has slowed the narrative down,
uh-huh.
And that hasn't helped it. So, obviously, these things are selling, people are loving it, but, I mean, you look at all the stuff DC has at the top of the list here, they're not going to have the Batman Who Laughs, the Batman Lost, the Batman Devastator, or that Batman Annual next month. So we can already kind of clock in a a recovery effort they're going to have to make of around 375,000 plus units just from what they lose from those.
Well, six of their top seven or eight, depending on how you look at Doomsday Clock, are Batman books.
Mm-hmm. Batman wasn't in Doomsday Clock, I'm going to say not a Batman book yet.
No, and to be fair, four of the next six are also Batman books.
Yeah.
With two detectives and another one shot, you know. Yeah, it's Batman's still Batman.
Well, I think it's a little bit more than just Batman is still Batman. If you take just things that have Batman in the title, you're at almost 750,000 units.
Yeah.
I mean, that's more than most publishers are doing. By which I mean, if you take out, if you take out DC, Marvel, and Image, Batman did better than everybody else put together on the top 300.
Yeah.
So, I mean, geez, Batman's a juggernaut. No big surprise there, obviously.
Yeah.
But there's also just a matter I want to say diversity in having different characters up there and stuff, but if it's working, it's working. But if you milk it too much, you drain the power.
Yes and no.
The power doesn't have to get drained. I'm saying typically it does get drained.
I think there are exceptions to that that almost prove the rule. If that makes any sense at all.
Such as?
There is an elite, elite class of characters that can pull this off. And Batman's one. I guess is what I'm saying.
I mean, I get what you're saying. I don't inherently disagree with it. However, even Batman, you look at how his title has been selling as during Rebirth and stuff, and it is losing steam.
Yes.
It's still the number one best-selling ongoing title, so it's not like it's got anything to worry about. But we really have very few titles that just kind of hold their own.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what else to say. It's still Batman, which is still something. On the other hand, it's, you know, it is what it is.
The one Batman thing I do want to mention, since we are talking about the character...
Sure.
Is down at rank 147.
Okay.
We've got Batman, the Dark Prince Charming hardcover on this list. 13,257 units. Mm-hmm. I do not know why a hardcover is on the comics list.
Yeah, that is weird.
Because it actually would have done, I believe, topped the trades list by... No, actually,
which rank is it?
Hang on, I flipped over. It is 147. It would have come in second on the trades list behind the Batman Earth 1 Volume 2 hardcover.
That is weird. Huh. Yeah, I don't know what to say.
I can say that it really messed up my data cleaning process.
Yeah.
Which was not expecting a hardcover, but, you know, I adapted. So, c'est la vie.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know what... This is an OGN any way you cut it.
Yeah, but no more or less than the Batman Earth 1 is. Maybe
which
it's a little
it doesn't
thinner.
Go on the which doesn't go on the comics list either.
Yeah, it topped the trade list.
You go to the DC website, it says this is a two-volume graphic novel series. You know, with the preview pages and everything.
Is it two volumes? I was thinking it was four.
I am looking at the DC comics, and this is way back from July. On the DC website, there is a...
No, it's two parts. You're right.
It says two-part graphic novel series.
Then I, as a reader, would question, why not wait until you got both parts and just put it out as a single one thing?
As a bigger graphic... Yeah, it's...
Just saying. Why not? Why serialize it?
Well, and it says the second one won't be coming out until the spring of 2018.
Oh, great. So I'll have read this and totally forgotten it by then.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say other than it's a weird thing. And I'm not sure why it's on this list.
Well, I mean, there was a ton of anomalies this month.
Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah, no, I'm looking. There seems to be a lot of things, and I'm not sure if it's... your system? Or?
Well, part of it is the spreadsheet I sent you is messed up. So I've actually reverted to a different copy. It doesn't have the copy and paste stuff. But what I'm seeing here is, I mean, we've got a number of titles because of Legacy that are up 200% or something, or titles that have dropped by, you know, some fairly staggering numbers.
Yeah.
And it's just, again, there's some volatility in the market. I mean, there's a lot of titles, particularly from Marvel and whatnot, that are down like 50%+.
Yeah.
And it's just, okay, they either hit a legacy issuing thing, issue number thing, and had a promotional push. This issue doesn't, so it suffers.
Yeah.
And when the numbers bounce around like that, it's just, it's chaotic.
Yeah. Now, here is the weird thing. According to Amazon, anyways, because I can't find it anyplace else, the Dark Prince Charming is 62 pages.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've got a copy right here, and it seems pretty thin.
It's weird. Let me take it back. The digital, the Amazon book is 62 pages. The print book is considered 72 pages. So I don't know what the difference in those 10 pages is.
Well, I've got it right here in front of me, and the thing is, I mean, the prestige format is what I would have done with something this size.
Yeah.
It doesn't have really that thick of a spine. So I think doing it as a hardcover, I mean, that's what they wanted to do, so.
Yeah. I get, you know, there's a part of me that gets that. I, you know, want to put out a hardcover, that's fine. I just, why it's on this list is the dumbfounding part.
So there are a couple of things over at DC that were up 30% or down 40% or something like that. A lot of those tended to be metal tie-ins or previously metal tie-ins that no longer are for this issue.
Okay.
These are ones that whenever I do a chart for one of my articles, there's, you know, I'll do a history chart of like one of these things, and it'll have just spikes. You know, every year at one point or whatever, it's, oh yeah, that's when they did this Batman crossover against the titles, or this is when the Green Lantern thing tied into metal, or this is, you know, and it's like a pop quiz. What was this spike again? Crossovers goose the numbers. It's all there is to it. If we look at DC for a moment, titles I would expect to, go away soon. A few of which I believe have already been announced would be Blue Beetle, Cyborg, New Superman, probably Superwoman, and I'm going just for the DC Universe titles themselves.
Is Ragman considered DC Universe?
It is, but it's a miniseries, which is kind of why I skipped over it and a few of the others.
What about Hellblazer?
Hellblazer is DC Universe, but because it's kind of a Vertigo-ish title, I think it gets a little bit more leeway than maybe one of the two of the titles above it, like Batwoman.
Or Batgirl and the Birds of Prey one.
Well, yeah.
That's borderline, though, at 17,000.
Well, but given there's a Batgirl title a few ranks above that or whatever.
At 20,300, yeah.
Yeah. So it comes down to, you know, when you're going to cut, you cut from the bottom. And you also consider which of these are with creators that I may be able to, even if it's a higher selling title, put on an even better selling title.
Yeah.
So there are other reasons than just raw sales that factor into it. But DC seems to have more of their titles in that sustainable level than I feel they've had at some points, even if most of them are not doing sensationally well.
Yeah.
And I think some of it comes down to, do you have the right creator on the right title at the right time? And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
Yeah, it's weird. Here is the other thing that this is interesting. I guess we kind of talk about this in the breakdown, but I think at this particular point, it is an interesting note. For all the random critical acclaim, and I'm including Image Comics in this, with the exception of The Walking Dead at rank 14, the next non-Marvel DC book on the list is at rank 84. That is Ninja K from Valiant at 25,505. It is also the only book other than The Walking Dead selling over 20,000 or 25,000.
25,000, yeah.
And barely. And there is a grand total of five books selling over 20,000. Two Image, one Valiant, and two Dynamite books. And one of those Dynamite books has Batman in it, Shadow Batman crossover.
I was going to say, if you look at the non-Marvel DC stuff over the 20,000, Walking Dead, geez, go figure.
Yeah.
Ninja K, which is a first issue, and he may have done some promotional stuff over at Valiant. They're doing good stuff. I actually thought it was a really good issue.
Yep.
Then you've got Paper Girls, that's got some acclaim behind it. Shadow Batman, geez, Batman, okay. John Wick, that's a media tie-in from the movie and such. And then even if you go below 20,000 and stuff, you hit American Gods.
Which is Neil Gaiman, media tie-in, all kinds of things there, too.
Yeah. And then a lot of these other things we're starting to see up in this area are ones that it's like some people would recognize. Either they would be recognizable properties, be it Spawn or Star Wars Adventures, or they're, in some cases, you know, first issues, and we'll see how they do after that. You know, Port of Earth and something, and Coyotes and such from Image. But yeah, there's most of these things that are non-Marvel DC. It's not just that they don't make the top 100 or whatever. They just don't sell comparatively that much.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's... If you wrap your mind, I mean, try to wrap your mind around this, there are some of these titles that you literally could get the entire readership into a single room. Granted, it'd be a pretty big room, like Hall H at Comic-Con or something like that. But still, I mean, you could get, I think, almost the entire readership of Star Trek Boldly Go, number 14 there into a single room. You know, it's, again, I wish there was a way that these titles could get better supported by the retailers without it being significantly risky for them to do so. Because I think there are a lot of these titles that are good growth opportunities for the comic industry, but the math just doesn't really work out. The risk assessment just doesn't really work out for the most part.
You know? Yeah, no. And again, you say big room. I mean, big room, small stadium.
I guess, well, I guess if you... if you were to count just Doomsday Clock and not the lenticular, just the lenticular and not the regular version or whatever, I'm not sure how big the UT Stadium is here in Austin, Texas, but I'm pretty sure everybody who got one, you know, a copy of Doomsday Clock could fit in that stadium. And that's the top selling thing this month.
Well, not quite. That stadium's not that big.
Is it? I thought it was, okay, maybe not. I don't know how
it's
big
about,
it is.
It's about 80,000.
I was thinking it was closer to 120.
Yeah.
Okay. My bad.
But, yes, when you start getting into those best-selling non-Big Two books, I mean, you're talking the average attendance for AAA baseball at that point.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking some pretty low numbers.
Well, and you look at some of this stuff, and even things that are hot properties.
Yes.
Star Trek Discovery, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Power Rangers, trying to think of what would be some other good examples of that. Kingsman, the movie and such, they don't move a whole lot of comics.
Nope.
And I wouldn't really expect them to, because I think these days, you know, people are just, they're too busy, they don't have time for stuff. Yeah, they'll go watch a movie, oh, they'll watch a TV show, but finding the time to go read something, finding the time to go to a comic store or even get it digitally or whatever, just doesn't work out for most people, I think.
Yeah. No, I could not agree more. It's one of those where I just... You know, and I don't know where the comics industry is going.
I would argue niche marketing, narrow casting, if you will.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. If you've got a loyal audience and they're happy with what you're doing, and okay, it's 20,000 people. But man, if they are a gung-ho 20,000 people, awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and there certainly is profit there. And as we hear from the, you know, some of the independent creator-owned guys, there's profit there, too, at these smaller numbers.
Mm-hmm. But that comes from work smart, not work hard for them, because they're smart in terms of finite, very controlled overhead. It's not like they're paying this corporate infrastructure for marketing, for publishing, for whatnot, for the most part. In other words, the sales of some of these things down further that are, you know, creator-owned books, and it may be the only title coming out from them, or one of two, or something like that, they can sell in the, you know, 4,000 or even 2,000 range, because they're not having to contribute anything to the corporate monolith of DC or Marvel or even Image or Dark Horse, Dynamite, and some of those.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure that out. Let's see.
I mean, I think these days, to be really successful in comics, you've got to have a fairly lean operation. Now, obviously, I'm probably mistaken on that, because I look at the masthead on some of these books, and it's like, wow, there's, you know, 24-some-odd people working at some of these smaller publishers. By smaller, I'm like IDW, Boom, Dynamite, stuff like that. I'm not sure exactly how many people they have on staff, but a couple. And that's fine. That's awesome. I think that's great. And they're not only supporting the comic stuff, but like at IDW, that's the movies, TVs, toy. I mean, they've got many other things they've got their hands in.
Yeah. And like I said, can you do it? Yes. How successful can you be at it, I guess, is relative to what you consider successful. So let's say your book's $3.99, right?
Okay.
You sell 5,000 a month.
Okay.
Okay. That, in theory, is a retail value of $19,950.
Sure.
Okay. Let's assume the reseller's gross margin's 50%. So the resellers get it at half price.
The stores, you mean?
Yes.
Okay, fair. Some now may get it less, some may get it more, depending on their discount rate. But yeah.
Now you're at $9,900 left over for the publisher. Or in this case, it's a creator.
What you didn't factor in there was Diamond's cut. So really, the publisher, my understanding, is getting closer to like 40% of the cover price, not 50.
Okay, so figure 40. So now at 40%.
You're what, $8,000-ish, $9,000 thereabouts?
What now?
I wasn't doing the math as we were talking.
Yeah, you're at $7,900.
Okay. So almost $8,000. Yeah, okay.
Okay. Now you got to figure the creator publisher's gross margin can't be better than 60. Figure you're paying 40% for listing in Diamond, shipping, printing, et cetera, et cetera.
Again, it depends how you do it. If you go through Image, you'd be doing the $2,500. If you're doing it yourself.
But you still got to print, right?
Yeah, the print is what starts to kill you at that point because it's a pretty big chunk. Yeah, but even then, you could have if you're getting one of these out a month, that's not bad.
So let's assume you're printing overhead, whatever that is, 40%, okay?
Typically, the printing would be on a per copy basis, but okay.
But figure it's 40%-ish of your what's left over of the margin.
Okay.
You're left with a 60% margin, essentially profit, on what you sold it to Diamond for. It's 47, not quite $4,800 a month, which is an annual salary of $57,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not starving. You're certainly not getting rich either, though.
Well, I don't think getting rich on the issues should be expected.
No. And like I said, it's a perfectly acceptable, and trust me, there's plenty of people buying comic books who would love to be making $57,000 a year.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not the dream huge salary either.
But let's look at the bigger picture.
Okay.
You're talking essentially about what if you were doing a monthly comic? So let's say you've done that and you're doing okay. You're not making tons of money, but you're making a living.
Okay.
You got into where you've gotten those six issues out. Now you can collect that into a trade. Now you're not having to pay for the content creation cost, just essentially the repackaging cost. Now you can get out there and kind of start doing that double dipping and stuff. You know, that's where you start to be able to make some more money and stuff because you're building up your backlist. Depends how well you manage your print run and things like that as to how well that does. This is really where Kirkman, I think, raised it to an art form. Because by continuing to keep The Walking Dead going, I mean, it's got 173 issues out there. That's 20-some-odd trades. It's a dozen or so hardcovers. It's, I've lost track of how many compendiums and such.
Yeah.
You know, that's where you can really start making your money, in terms of if you've got a slow month or whatever, or if the sales on the monthly dip below a certain point. You can almost use that as a little bit of a loss leader, and it can become advertising for the trades. And if you've got a property that's been around long enough, there's again that carrot at the brass ring at the end of the thing of can you get that movie deal, that TV deal, or something of that sort.
Yeah.
It's certainly not a surefire thing. It's certainly not for everybody. But if you've got something where you know what you can produce in terms of your speed of output and stuff and your quality, and you've got a good story or whatnot. There are a lot of people doing pretty well with this. And
again, that's relative. Since we picked 5,000, I went for what appears to be a book in that range.
Okay.
Easiest one I could find was at rank 292, Dark Horse, Harlow County, okay. issue 27. I wanted something that had enough issues out that I could kind of go to the trade list. Harlow County Volume 1's on the trade list at 725 units.
Okay.
$14.99. Figure the same general margins for printing and distribution. Mm-hmm. That becomes an extra $1,700 a month, essentially. You know, it is what it is.
Where are you going with this?
It's helpful, but, and again, a lot of this has to do with where you're living, all those kind of things. It's a decent salary that many people would be thrilled with, but it's certainly not doing exceedingly well. It takes the yearly income from about 55 to about 75,000.
Well, it's one of those that each year you do it, you get more trades, therefore you can build up a little bit more there. So I'm not suggesting somebody's going to be, you know, living high on the hog and just, wow, they're raking it in, go buy all
that. Like I said, that is a perfectly legitimate salary.
Oh, yeah.
And you're doing just great. Don't get me wrong. But the dreams of making it big in the entertainment industry aren't that either.
Well, and the other thing to keep in mind is that's if you've got something that can stick around for a couple of years.
Exactly, which is also the other point I was going to make up. There's not – the reason I struggled to find something at those – there's not a lot of things at those kind of numbers.
Yeah.
This is one thing with one trade, and now to say, well, that'll happen forever, no, not necessarily.
No. I think if you can do those sales, you're doing good, but you're also a bit in the minority because – I can name a number of titles that were pretty big and worth talking about, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, that if I were to mention now, people would be like, huh? Well, I don't remember that.
Exactly.
And the reason I'm not mentioning them now is I'm in that category of, huh? I don't remember that. But like Proof from Image a couple of years.
I remember that was a big name guy, though, wasn't it?
But does anybody even remember the title now?
Was that Jason Aaron, though?
I don't think so, but I don't remember.
I mean, I remember the book existing. I remember it kind of being a big deal.
It was a big deal until it wasn't. And then Shortly thereafter, it essentially vanished from the consciousness. As will many of these.
I've never heard of either of these people. Well, no, I take it back. The artist I do know.
Yeah.
Alex Gretchen and Riley Rossmo was the artist who I do know.
Mm-hmm. It was a fun book.
Looks like it got to 28 issues.
I mean, a lot of what keeps some of these things around is... what's the passion the creators have for this? Is it giving them enough income to feel comfortable, be happy with what they're doing, and stuff like that? And how much of it is kind of a control of their own destiny versus, you know, do they want the comfort of a exclusive contract and a regular paycheck over at Marvel or DC or something?
Yeah.
And certainly, as much as I think creator-owned is a great way to go, and I recommend it for a lot of people, I also completely get... the reason a lot of creators have gone over the years exclusive for that stability. Having that regular paycheck or whatever, that guarantee of one, has made the difference in some cases of if somebody can buy a house or not, or if they're having health problems. I mean, Brian Michael Bendis right now has been hospitalized a time or two recently with some serious stuff. And the fact that, you know, he's got some stuff he can lean on with Marvel and DC no doubt helps. If he were still doing Jinx and just... you know, had been grinding it out as a self-publisher and whatnot, the health problems he's having right now easily could have bankrupted him. So it's one of those things that the risk to these indie creators of being self-employed, not having the healthcare and all of that stuff, counterbalanced by if they do hit it big, they could hit it big. Now, again, I don't know how many of these properties are likely to become, you know, major motion pictures or you know, TV shows that people are just, you know, amazed by or whatever.
Well, and how many of those exist? I mean, seriously, how many of those really exist?
Enough to keep the dream alive. That's a great question. I don't know because, you know, scanning through this list, I'm seeing more things that have come from other mediums you know, movie, TV, that sort of thing in a video game into comics versus the other way around.
Yeah.
And given that comics is a fairly inexpensive incubation medium, that's a little surprising. But also, yeah, a lot of these are recognizable IP, intellectual property, whatever, are also tend to be corporate-owned ones, even if they weren't originally that way.
Yeah.
Again, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I was blown away when I realized at one point that Nickelodeon had bought it lock, stock, and barrel after a chain of events. So a lot to factor in there.
But I mean, I'm trying to think of what is something that's come from comics and gone on to movies and television, as you said. That's really
Spawn. I'm just starting at the top of the list.
Spawn's a different era.
True, true.
I mean, Spawn was selling 100,000 issues, you know, when it came out too.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to think. Here's an interesting one. Wanted. What did Wanted actually make at the box office? Yeah, $341 million on a $75 million budget worldwide. It's pretty good.
That came out in 2003.
Yeah.
Just doing a quick chart. I'm going to say the first one did around 72 plus thousand, then around 47,000, and then it's probably a reprint there. I'm just looking at a quick chart from month to month, so then around 42,000, 43,000, stayed around there for a few issues, and then ended around 46,000. So it was actually, it would have, you know, if it was on this list at that, say, 46,000 or whatever, it would have been in the top 40.
Okay. And so again, we just went over, there's literally not a book that fits that category right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, who knows what the, you know, I wonder how much a deal like that was worth to Millar.
The one with Netflix?
No. The Wanted. The Wanted.
Great question.
I mean, the movie itself probably made about $260 million worldwide. But again, some big names. You know, Morgan Freeman and Angelina Jolie got a big piece of that too.
Yeah.
You know, Danny Elfman did the music. You know, you got the producers, the executive producers.
I would say, though, the value.
I wonder how much they bought the rights from Millar for.
The value to Millar, though, for the Wanted deal was not in that deal, but the deals it facilitated later.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because, I mean, Chrononauts is getting optioned. He's done a ton of other things. It's just a matter of, you know, once you've got that first big break in the movie stuff, which I think this would qualify for him.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure if he had done stuff prior to that or whatever. That's where he stopped being just a comic guy.
Okay.
And it opened a lot of doors. And, I mean, even you look at Walking Dead, Robert Kirkman, he's doing a lot of stuff outside of comics, not just the Walking Dead TV show. He had another AMC thing of Robert Kirkman's Secret History of Comics.
Yeah, okay.
I'm guessing you may have watched one or two of those.
I have not. Believe it or not, I recorded them all, and a night when I was out doing other things, work, whatever, my wife watched several of them.
I've watched all six.
She seemed to enjoy the first two or three that she watched, but she's not a comic book fan and doesn't come from the same place you would or even I would. So I don't know. What did you think of them?
In most cases, I learned one or two things, so I thought they were useful. It was hard for me, and I don't know if it's just my bias is showing through, but to feel that there was a definite bias of the series. Whenever DC tended to be focused on, it's how they were taking advantage of Siegel and Schuster, or you know, didn't do right by the Milestone guys and stuff like that. When Image was mentioned, they were like the Holy Grail. These are the guys who are sticking it out for the industry, who are doing the, you know, the right thing for everybody else. Kind of a almost put up on a pedestal sort of a thing.
Yeah, well, that's one of those people don't understand the value of capital. Which is what a lot of that comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Siegel and Schuster. Okay. yes, Superman's worth billions and billions of dollars. Were they probably entitled to more than they got? Yes. And every creator will say, well, they didn't get what they deserved. Okay, fine. What no creator will talk is all those Marvel series we just talked about that got canceled that were losing money. Mm-hmm. How many of them are, you know, offering to give back to Marvel because they got paid more than it was worth?
Yeah.
There's two sides to that story. You can absolutely do it on your own. Go for it. But don't underestimate the power of the capital that allowed you to do it.
Well, but that was, again, part of the narrative of the Image Comics episode that, you know, the only real choice that was viable prior to Image was Marvel and DC. You didn't like one, you go across the street to the other. You didn't like that, you're out of luck.
But that's not true.
I agree with that. But that was the narrative they were pushing.
I mean, Dave Sim, the first and ultimate bad boy and independent, did it all on his own.
And there were tons of other successful smaller publishers, just like there are now. This is nothing new. It was around in the 80s.
Well, and again, Eastman and Laird, there's the biggest name of the bunch.
You had First, you had Eclipse, you had Kimiko, you had, I mean, so there's, with any era of comics, be it current, past, whatever, there are many different vantage points you can have on it, many different interpretations you can have of it. Some of them may be a little more factual based. Some of them may just be, and I'm not trying to imply that The Secret History of Comics by Kirkman is not fact based. They had some very interesting stuff. And I thought in some of the episodes, while it was a little bit not slanted, but it certainly never seemed to be in favor of DC, whereas it was a little bit more so for Marvel and certainly a lot more so for Image. I mean, the Image one never mentioned, they never bothered to finish putting out that Image United series, or they've had a lot of delays and lateness and whatnot, and just kind of gloss over all that. And that's fine. I'm not saying they have to cover all of that. But
and again, it's weird. I got home that evening while my wife sat and watched several of them. And so I caught the last, I don't know, 5-10 minutes of the Milestone one, which, again, was interesting. And yes, would I love to see those characters out there and doing more? And absolutely. But is DC preventing that from happening? Or simply is there no one with the capital willing to take the risk on those kind of things?
Or are there other issues involved because one of the founders passed away, and who owns what rights? I don't know. I'm just saying that's a possibility.
But those characters weren't being used to their fullest before that passing either.
True, true. I think the Milestone characters are wonderful ones. I'd like to see them come back. I'd love to see them come back.
I would too. And I think they are great characters. But the issue, like I said, with all of this stuff, everything sounds great. And like I said, when something succeeds, creators are very much, I want my fair share. When something fails, no creators are, I wanted to risk my own money on it failing.
Exactly. There's a certain thing you give up when you let somebody else pay for the printing and publication stuff.
Exactly.
And again, that was an overriding thing throughout that series of, well, you know, look at what happened to Kirby. Look at what happened to Siegel and Schuster and such, you know. And again, that's the history of the medium.
Yeah.
And it's not unique to comics.
No, it's not unique to anything. But again, there is a value to somebody took a risk.
Well, again, when we were talking
about value to that,
if you were to do a comic and you could sell 5,000 copies or whatever, before you can sell those 5,000 comics, you have to spend the time to go create that comic. You've got to have the money to go print that comic. You've got to go reach to Diamond and say, hey, will you carry it and talk them into doing it? That takes some effort, some time, some money, you know, and you've expended that time and effort and risk and whatnot in the hopes of getting it back, whereas it's a different thing if you can just convince somebody over at Image of, hey, I've got this great idea, and even if you have to lie to them to get it created, that's apparently okay.
Yeah.
I did find that part of the origin of The Walking Dead to be kind of funny.
I haven't seen it. Whatever.
Apparently, he had this idea for The Walking Dead, a zombie comic. You know, like, zombie comics don't sell. What's your twist? It's like, they're going to be aliens. It's going to be this. It's going to be that kind of. It's a plan. You know, aliens are doing it or whatever. Apparently, he later found out he was essentially swiping some of the concept of Plan 9 from outer space. And this is what led to the backup feature in Walking Dead number 75, I think it was. And then after many issues had come out, Stevenson's like, so when are you going to get to that stuff? It hadn't really shown up yet. And he's like, I lied to you.
Yeah, okay.
Like, probably just as well.
You know, and now to be fair, and I will give this, I will give the Image founders particularly this credit, and to some degree Robert Kirkman more modern times. They did get to a point in their career and their lives where they said, okay, now we do want to take the risk. And now we do want to put the capital in. And that is a different and scary place. And those gentlemen did it. And, you know,
yeah, they have and you've been gotta rewarded. Give credit for that.
Absolutely, you do.
You know, you look at the early Image stuff, there were some rocky times.
Absolutely.
Story plot and stuff was a little light, whatever, but they persevered. They stuck through it. Here we are, 25 plus years later. Walking Dead is the best-selling non-Marvel and DC comic on the charts by a wide margin. Image has a ton of titles on there. A handful are even being done by the Image partners or whatnot directly. Others are not. It's funny because for all of their talk of getting out of the work-for-hire system, whether they use those exact words or not, but controlling their own destiny, which those partners certainly have. Then you have things like Youngblood, which is being done by people other than Rob Liefeld. You've got, you know, them having farmed out some of their characters or whatnot to other creators on a work-for-hire kind of a basis. And most of what Image is coming out with is something where they're essentially, you know, letting other people borrow their shingle, if you will, and put it under the Image eye.
Yeah. Which, again, there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
I just, every time you kind of hear the, oh, you know, we don't get what we deserve, it's always from things that succeed. It's never, yeah, you guys took all these risks and it bombed and I want to give you all that money back. No, you never hear that one.
Yeah. Well, again, you go through the list of what's coming out from Image right now, and I would be surprised if most of these would have seen publication had Image not been around. Everything from Paper Girls to East of West, obviously Invincible, Wicked and Divine, Black Magic, Lazarus, just to name a handful. Others, I think, definitely would have seen print somewhere, like Mage.
Well, the interesting thing, Lazarus, didn't that come from, I see it's, is this the same, is this the Greg Rucka Lazarus?
It is, but they're doing a mini series while, crap, I'm blanking on the regular artist's name. Wanted just some time to either do something else or refresh his battery or whatever. So this
My point is,
Michael
when
Lark.
It first came out, it wasn't at Image.
I believe it was.
I thought it was first, second. What's the little studio in Portland? What was
I don't know.
I'm trying to look it up really quickly.
I thought Lazarus was always an Image book. I could be misremembering.
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember who put out the first one.
Part of it with the Marvel stuff, or not the Marvel, the Image stuff, is they go through so many titles, it's hard sometimes just to remember, you know, which ones I'm getting.
Lazarus, I guess, was always at Image.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Greg Rucka had a book at some point he was doing with a smaller...
Queen and Country from Oni?
Yeah, okay, but he did one after Queen and Country, also at Oni. And I thought it was Lazarus, but I guess I'm wrong.
It was
that.
Not. It was, I but don't yes, remember okay. what it was.
But you remember what I... Okay, at least you... Yeah, yeah. There was something else he did, other than...
And Rucka was actually interviewed and stuff for the Secret History of Comics on Image and a few other things, so...
Stumptown is what I was thinking of.
Ah, never read that.
He did kind of concurrently with the beginnings of Lazarus at Oni.
Yeah, he'd done a couple of things, I think, over at Oni.
Yeah. Well, and Whiteout, of course, which got turned into...
That was the other one I was thinking. I'd forgotten about that.
A good story that got turned into a horrible film. Not that I blame Mr. Rucka for that. That was just a horrible film.
Yeah.
But yes. But yeah, no, and there's a lot of great, interesting things on this list. Let's see what else we have here besides Marvel, DC, and Image. Let's see what else comes up. It looks interesting. Well, this will be interesting. Let's take Marvel and Image and DC off the list.
Image as well. Okay, I'd already filtered out DC and Marvel. And it almost fits on a single screen for me.
It almost fit on a single screen. Other than Valiant, there's, like you talked about earlier, a lot of licensed property.
Oh, yeah. Everything from Rick and Morty, Star Wars, G.I. Joe, on up and down. And I get it. They're recognizable properties. I think It's interesting that even from the non-Marvel DC stuff, there's a lot of almost working on corporate-owned things. And again, nothing wrong with it. I love it when they take an existing property and tell more stories with it if they do a good job.
Yeah.
But it goes almost a little counter to the get away from Marvel and DC and do your own thing. Yes. Doing your own thing, as we've talked about, is risky.
Exactly.
But no risks, no rewards sometimes, too. Really, a lot of these quickly get down under the 10,000 unit range.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very quickly.
You were going to ask?
No, I answered my own question. Oh, okay. That's okay. Once I thought about it, I went, oh, I know the answer to that. there's a lot of, like I said, man, this is almost all licensed stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, it would be, wow. This list would be four or five things if we took out the licensed stuff.
I could be a little bit longer than that, but I may be misguessing as to whether a few other things are licensed or not. But it wouldn't be significantly long, yes.
No.
You'd have things like Fence.
Tarot.
I'm trying to think what else. I mean, yeah, it's...
Harlow County. I started at the bottom thing. There might be a few more down here. Giant Killers.
Well, and you get into some other areas like the Robin Hood stuff from Zenoscope. It's not licensed, but it's kind of not, if you know what
I
mean.
Yeah, kind of like the Sherlock Holmes thing, because I believe Sherlock's in the Sherlock Frankenstein thing from Dark Horse. I'm like,
yeah, there's public domain, or I don't say may as well have been, but...
But yeah, it's not an original idea either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, it's pretty much Valiant and a very small other list of original properties and a lot of licensed stuff. I'm not reading them. I'm just, I guess, a little too old for this generation. Have you read, or do you care about, because I think you reviewed one, DuckTales?
I read the first issue or two.
You guys did it on the Weekly Spotlight, is that right?
Yes, we did the first one on the Weekly Comic Spotlight.
And your complaint was you're not familiar with that kind of line of characters, and you wanted Uncle Scrooge, and that's not what DuckTales is.
Well, it's funny, because they cover very similar ground, but the tone and style is different.
Yes.
They're focusing on Huey, Dewey, and Louie, and, you know, Donald and the others are just kind of around, whereas I kind of like it more when, even when Huey, Dewey, and Louie are focused on over in Uncle Scrooge, it's a different tone and style of the book.
Yeah.
And I never watched DuckTales.
Yeah, no, me neither. I'm kind of just the wrong generation.
I'm curious about the current one with David Tennant as Scrooge.
I kind of said, oh, I'll give it a shot. I do not like the animation style, which just drives me up a wall. It's a style of animation I don't care for.
Well, and I think they were kind of aping it in the comic.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. I remember you saying you're not caring for the art style either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did check out below it at rank 235, Fence number 1.
Okay. And how was that?
I believe Heidi had mentioned on the previous spotlight. I enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
Good.
A lot of fun, different kind of a story. It is, I want to say, Japanese in not execution or whatever, but in genre, if you will, using the wrong words. Because it, over there, they'll do stories on all sorts of things. And the whole concept of somebody who's a kid going to a fencing school or whatever, not something typically in an American comic, but they did a great job with it.
You guys did a Weekly Spotlight on this, didn't you?
On Fence? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I'm like, it sounds like I remember you talking about this. Okay.
We did. What else did we do spotlights on or reviews of? Minky Woodcock, Girl Who Handcuffed Houdini, number 1 at rank 261.
Okay.
Was not enough to get me to come back.
Yeah, as I remember, neither of you were particularly impressed with that one.
Yeah. And we talked Fence. We talked... I'd have to go check. Yeah,
fair
check
enough.
What we've done.
But yeah, it's, you know, it's an interesting list. Are these price point? Is this stuff correct
on what you've got? Possibly not, because again, I screwed up that thing. 237 of the items are $3.99, so 79% of them. Another 13% are $2.99,
and that's less than 40 issues.
Yeah, it's 39 issues. Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
So the price points are creeping up again, $4.99, $5.99 for the oversized stuff, and they're going more to the oversized as they can.
And $12.99 in a book we still think belongs on the trade list.
Yeah.
For a hardcover.
And if you include the stuff that's kind of under the 300 radar, but are there because of small and indie stuff, it gets up to, I think, 273 items at 399, which is 91. No, that can't possibly be right. I was going to say that's 91% of the list, but then I've got another 13% at 399. So that math is just wrong.
It seems like there's several, three or four, $4.99 books in that area and a $5.99 book in that area.
Hang on just a sec as I'm
Zenoscope's Neverland Returns at rank 408 is $5.99.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Book's Snow White 80th Anniversary is $4.99. Zenoscope Van Blade Season 2 is $4.99. Action Lab Dragon Doll Squad's $4.99.
Yeah, the prices are starting to creep up there.
Yeah.
It's
and Action Lab's doll faces at $4.99.
Even if you look at the full list, it's still around 79-80% of the items at $3.99.
Yeah.
So it's
$4.99 seems to be Action Lab's price these days. Zombie Tramps in the top 300 at rank 275 is $4.99. And they've got two books that showed up in the below the radar stuff, both $4.99.
Yeah.
Wow, that's an indie publisher going to $4.99 is an interesting choice.
Well, go back to when I was reading comics in the 80s, and indie comics were typically a dollar more than Marvel and DC.
Okay.
So that sort of thing, it went away for a while, but...
But that's when Marvel and DC were, what, 95 cents, 65 cents?
Thereabouts, I was going to say, you know, it would be like 150 versus 250 or something like that.
Okay, I'm trying to remember kind of that era. What I do remember the $1.50s on the like the Ninja Turtles early books,
which seemed
absorbently high because I think comics were 65 cents at that point.
It was just one of those points where the smaller publishers they just had to charge more, and you know it sucked, but that's where you could get some other properties you just couldn't get at Marvel and DC.
Yeah. Well, and again, when you're getting into, and I gotta believe even the bigger companies like Marvel and DC selling where they're at. What did we just, Marvel 2.4 million units for a company that's used to being over 3 in a month. I gotta believe if that trend continues, printing will go up for them even.
Yeah.
I mean, quite simply, if you're buying less, the printers are going to charge you more. Even at huge numbers.
Yeah, I mean, that's basic, you know, economies of scale and stuff.
Yeah.
That's part of why the market favors the already successful.
Yeah.
They get the better deals. And that was something that, again, going back to the Secrets of Steve Collins, we talked about with Image, is as the market kind of imploded a little in the mid-90s and whatnot, you know, they were printing less stuff, and to keep some of the deals they had to start taking on books from other studios and whatnot. And they were very flat out. We published some stuff we weren't particularly proud of.
Yeah.
It's like, I get it.
But they had to print stuff, yeah.
There's a certain amount of, if you're almost paying for it anyways.
Yep.
But yeah, this is one of those months where DC was above its average by about 500,000 and Marvel was below by about 500,000.
Yeah.
So it's interesting turning point, potentially. We'll see what happens long term. But with DC starting up Doomsday Clock, and that's going to go for a year as either a true event or quasi-event or whatever it turns out to be sales-wise, in terms of does it have tie-ins, does it not. They've also still got Metal that's got the last half to kind of finish off. Marvel really doesn't seem to have anything on the horizon where it's like, wow, that's just going to sell through the roof. Yep. At least nothing I've noticed. And I haven't looked at the latest solicits.
If you're looking at units, when you're talking average, well, Image is down for their last year or so. They're actually near, they're still well above their average for this list.
Mm-hmm.
And IDW doing particularly well.
Well,
for their average.
Their average, though, also covers a period when they didn't have the licenses.
Okay.
And they really hadn't stepped up to the plate the way they've had over the last couple of years.
But in the last 12 months, it's in the top quarter of, you know,
yeah,
of their stuff, though.
No, and they're doing well. And again, I think a lot of it goes to managing their licenses well. They've got a number of them, and they seem to do a good job with them.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. They got the Star Wars Adventures. I forgot about that.
They got Star Wars. They've got Star Trek.
The Turtles, My Little Pony, G.I. Joe, DuckTales that we talked about, the Transformers, of course. So, yeah, they've got all the Hasbro stuff, plus the Turtles, plus DuckTales and Star Wars.
Yeah.
And Star Trek. So, yeah, they are managing quite a library of licensed stuff.
And managed to get one or two kind of original things snuck in there.
Yeah, that is true as well.
So, I'm personally a little disenchanted with the Hasbro line. I was liking it before they kind of cross-pollinated and got their Transformers mixed up with ROM and G.I. Joe and back and forth and stuff. That's about when I pulled out of there.
Yeah. I'm not a big Hasbro guy. I've always been a big G.I. Joe guy. Fortunately, Real American Heroes remain fairly unchanged.
Yeah, and again, that's kind of its own corner of the G.I. Joe out of the Hasbro universe.
Yeah, it's Larry Hama's been doing this for almost 30 years. Leave him alone.
Yeah, if it works, why break it?
Exactly. So, yeah.
Let me do a quick chart of that just to get a sense for how that is doing.
And seem to have a huge jump, and that was when you kind of said, what were you going to ask? That's what I was going to ask, and I remembered why.
For?
G.I. Joe. That huge jump on 246.
But the Real American Hero brand of it is, it's not selling through the roof or anything, but it's fairly consistent in sales, and seems to be something that they can kind of, you know, have come out reliably and please a certain audience, so.
Yeah, that was the new Snake Eyes,
yeah,
issue. It was funny because as soon as I said what? Oh yeah, that's right. That was the new Snake Eyes issue.
I mean, 6,000 units, 6,068. Not setting the world on fire and stuff, but you know, it's been going for a good couple of years now. And yeah, there's a little erosion. Sometimes it goes on an upswing. Sometimes not so much. But I would say over the last couple of years, reasonably stable ish in sales.
Can you do me a favor? Do the same thing for the Turtles.
Okay.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the series has started in 2011. It's on issue 76 on this list.
When did it start again? Which year?
2011. And that's a very consistent seller.
Even more consistent than I would say the Real American Hero and stuff. I would say it's around the 14,000 to 16,000 range. It's had some times it's above that. A little recently where it's getting down towards the little under 13,000 or whatever. But it's a flat-ish. I mean, obviously it's got peaks and valleys here and there. But if I were publishing and I had something like that, I would be happy because it would be something I would feel I could kind of rely on to do about thus and so every month.
Yep. Well, and, you know, they've got Kevin Eastman been writing it for 75 issues now.
Yeah, I mean,
what else can you ask for?
Yeah. And I think a couple of those peaks and valleys were when they did a couple of, you know, major turning points in the story and whatnot. And
yeah, they have. They've done some cool stuff. The other thing, G.I. Joe, while it's had some ancillary titles, the Turtles have gone nuts with ancillary. You know, G.I. Joe, yeah. There's Real American and occasionally maybe one or two others. Ninja Turtles, there's 10 on this list every month.
Well, G.I. Joe at one point had Cobra. It had like 4 or 5 going at one point.
It had 3 others plus Real American Hero. But to be fair, Real American Hero didn't start until a couple of those started to go away.
True. And again, to me, that's kind of off on the side. What I'm debating in the next order form, the January one, is the G.I. Joe $6 Million Man crossover.
Wow, how many Steve Austin fans can there be left?
I don't know.
I know you're a huge. I think I'm even just a little too young for that. Because I don't know that character that well at all.
I just don't think they've ever really gotten a good take on it lately in the comics.
Yeah, no, and I know you've reviewed a few and over the years, and you've tried them all, and you haven't been particularly thrilled with any of them, as I remember.
One or two that I liked, but I could also see where they weren't going to hit the wide appeal or whatever. But again, it's a property from the 70s. It's a little dated.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, and that is what it is. There's a fine line between finding something that's got something in the culture that's got an audience and just digging up something that's ancient that everybody forgot about. And $6 million man's walks that fine line.
You know, I would kind of agree, kind of disagree, because I can name, or at least think of, even if I can't totally name them, half a dozen shows over the last decade that are variations on the theme of, with technology, we can make the man better.
Oh, absolutely. And they brought back...
They did a Bionic Woman series for half a
season. I was going to say, something, they brought back either him or the Bionic Woman or something.
The Bionic Woman.
In a modern... When they tried to bring back Knight Rider, that was NBC Studios, I remember.
Yeah.
Neither of those lasted. But yeah. But that was... Oh, that was 73. Yeah. When it, yeah.
73 when the movie happened, and they did three or four more movies between 74, maybe into 75 when it became... I think that's when it started going as a series and went to about 78-ish.
Okay.
Give or take.
Which for the kind of current nostalgia-buying crowd is the lower limit?
It would be interesting if somebody has done a study on kind of nostalgia properties at any given point. Roughly how far back do they date? Are they a trailing 30 years, 20 years, 40 years? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What is that sweet spot?
See, I'm not sure it's... There's just, I think, something about pop culture that happened. And I'd argue Star Wars, kind of the original 77, just hit a magical point. And when you get before 77, at that point, it's just old people stuff. And from Star Wars on, it's kind of, okay, this is the next generation.
I get what you're saying. And as a... A guideline, I would agree with that.
And like I said, the $6 million man walks that fine line where it's almost pre that.
Part of it with any 70s property is the 70s had such a pronounced style.
Yes.
Musically and visually that things from that era are dated in or identifiable as such. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, there's just... Yeah, it is weird, though, because when you think nostalgia, it's hard to think of things that go back before Star Wars. So, yeah, that you know, and they've tried, I think, to lesser success.
I guess my question is, how much of that is just because of our age and where we're at in time versus, you know, in the 80s, the nostalgia buttons they were pushing, where did they draw from? And even in the 60s and the 70s, where did they pull from?
Fair enough. That is entirely possible.
You think in the 70s and stuff, when you've got, you know, Happy Days and stuff like that, they're pulling from the 50s. So arguably about a 20-year lag.
Well, yeah, no, and I always said that. Mm-hmm. It's funny. People talk about Happy Days, and I don't think, and to be fair, you can just say it was a direct knockoff, but it's interesting. I've always said that 70s show was the exact same shows 20 years later, exactly. It was 20 years after Happy Days. It took place in a time period 20 years after Happy Days. Mm-hmm. It was almost the exact same show, just 20 years later across the board.
Well, and there are other shows that are slightly different tonally, like Wonder Years and stuff like that.
Yeah, you know? Wonder Years is an interesting one that is actually in between the two and in between the two eras as well.
But it's always one of those things of, as an adult, what was my childhood like in, you know, a real imagined thing.
And arguably the Goldbergs is that show currently.
Interesting, yeah. And again, there are certain things that are patterns we see in the entertainment culture and stuff. And again, we see the same sort of thing in comics, just manifesting a little differently. As creators come in and say, this is what I thought was cool when I was a kid, I want to bring it back.
Yeah.
And then 10 years later, the next crop is, but I thought this was cool from 10 years off of what they thought was cool. I'm going to bring it back. And you've got pendulums that swing back and forth.
So it sounds like we're settling on somewhere around 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean there's a big rush of nostalgia coming for things from the late 90s soon?
Well, let's see. Falcon was a miniseries from Marvel in the 90s. He's got his own book now.
The Falcon.
Okay, maybe that was the 80s.
Yeah, okay.
I was not thinking when he was in Cap. I was thinking when he had his own stuff.
Okay.
Again, I'm thinking more 80s. I was going to go with the New Mutants and then U.S. Avengers and, you know,
now, we're talking
like
late 90s. I mean,
yeah, late 90s. I'm trying to think what was coming out at that point. That was...
That was what we were just talking about. That, and arguably, it's been longer, but, I mean, wasn't... Besides the Crash, that was kind of the heyday of the Image Founders books.
That was early 90s, 92-ish.
Yeah.
when did we start hitting Heroes Reborn and such like that?
Now you're in like 95, 96-ish.
So that would be what we should be nostalgic for.
Yeah.
We got Youngblood back. Does that count? Oh, I'm kidding.
Yeah, there you go.
So it's just one of those periods where this month we've got a lot, like I said, ups and downs and stuff like that based on, you know, where things are at in their promotional pushes and whatnot. But a lot of what we've got on this list is falling in that 20, 30, 40,000-ish range. And nothing that is, I guess it worries me a little that the top of the list is something where I think most of it won't be back next month. And I'm not thinking of anything off the top of my head that it's, oh, well, this will take its place.
Well, what I think is interesting about the top of the list is basically two events. And we're used to seeing that with one being Marvel and one being DC.
Yeah.
What we're not used to seeing is two DC events at the top of the list and Marvel not really having an event.
Yeah.
They've got an Infinity story coming, right? As an event.
That's what I hear.
Okay.
Whether that really, because I mean, I was seeing Infinity Countdown stuff in the latest solicits.
Yeah.
But that would be 3 months out. And again, first quarter of the year tends to be a little slow sometimes. We've still got December. We'll see how that is. And again, by and large, nothing to panic. None of this is like, oh my God, everything's plummeted or something. It's not the floor's fallen out from under Marvel or something. And again, when people were painting online the Marvel cancellations as a bloodbath, I thought that was overstating things pretty significantly.
Yeah, no, they canceled their worst 5 or 6 books. That happens on a regular basis.
Well, and not just the worst books. Books that are dipping into the 10,000 range. Things they wouldn't have even considered publishing at one point.
Exactly.
So
I agree. I think it's a ridiculous kind of overstatement.
Yeah. But if you look at the factors that were driving sales up and factors driving stuff down, there was a pretty wide swing, with the upswing being about 2.2 million, the downswing being almost 2.7 million. And of course, canceling out at a drop of about a little under 500,000.
Yeah.
So not the strongest of months, but not, you know, oh my God. But you have a month where you don't have a lot of strong number ones and such, or let me rephrase, first issues, because legacy ones count, initial issues of a new volume. How about that? Things could look pretty bleak for a month or two without much trouble. But there's plenty of stuff to read, plenty of good stuff out there. Whether or not it's hitting mass approval or not, if you can't find something you're looking for, or you're enjoying or whatever, post on the forum, post on the Slack channel, and we'll help you out, because there's plenty of great stuff out there.
Yep, absolutely.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I'm good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or excuse, 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.